morning. I'll call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, June 13, 2017. Those of you that have looked at the dais up here see that it is a fairly packed agenda for us today, so I'm going to endeavor to move us through as expeditiously as possible. One note to make before we get started, we're doing three interviews for two different boards or commissions that we have today. And we've asked those individuals that were interviewing to come at 11:30. So wherever we are moving through our agenda at 11:30, we're going to move to those interviews, get done with those, and then we'll go back to where we need to be on the agenda just in respect of their time. With that, I would ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, thank you again and good morning. First item, as always, is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. Susie, while we don't have this on the agenda, since it's going to be an extremely long meeting, I'll give you the option. You want to do it now or do you want to do it at the end of the meeting?
Me?
Yeah, you.
No.
Okay, Susie Petro would like to speak to us on CAFO expansions. We always like seeing Susie.
I always like seeing you all. Good morning, Susie Petra, 2011 Duff Avenue, Ames, Iowa. My concern is the continued expansion that we are asked to do for CAFOs, which, of course, is looking at a business's personal profit over our waterways. I want to remind everyone that expanding CAFOs does not increase port, for instance, for Iowans or for the Midwest or for people in this country. We sell a good portion. We export port to China, to Canada, and Mexico. Those are our three big partners for exporting pork. All three of those countries have a great deal of land mass. I encourage them to raise their own pork. And it is time that we start looking at the public good of our waterways and keeping those numbers down. Thank you.
Thanks, Susie.
Thank you. I'd like to let the board know that, and Susie, since she was interested when we had the discussion before about the master matrix, that I did follow up a couple weeks ago with Ethan Anderson, our civil counsel, asked if he had heard back from the Iowa Attorney General's office yet. He had not, so Ethan has, I believe, put in another call to them. We were waiting to hear their opinion on whether we might be in legal grounds, even if we looked at enacting some kind of ordinance over part of the matrix options.
Super. And as I recall, when we had the conversation, and that would have been, what, February or March, we kind of put a 1st of June deadline for the Attorney General to respond to us. Okay. So I think it's completely appropriate that you start to bring this conversation back forward, and let's see where it goes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Susie. Next item is consideration of the request to Story Housing Trust Fund for funding those municipalities within the county with a population under 2,000. And we have the two co-chairs, Eileen and Jason, with us today. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming back. Let's see. So to set the table, the board approved Story County contributing on a per capita basis its portion, which is about $4,500. But at that point, we also talked about the possibility of the county contributing for these smaller communities. I believe you guys have since reached out to those communities, and you can tell us where we are.
Correct. Thank you for having this opportunity. And I think we might want to pull Brenda Dreyer in, who's here today. She's been working with Craig Henry from the city of Huxley on this, and I think she can give us a little better brief on where we are there.
Good morning, board.
I just have a couple short comments that I'll add. You know, when Mayor Henry and I visited or during one of the more recent task force meetings, alluded to the community of Cambridge had indicated they were not going to do a resolution of support. I circled back around with the community, gave them some additional details and background as I understood it, and they have indeed passed a resolution of support. So I think during my dialogues with Mayor Henry, that was the one that we had a concern with, and that has now been approved by the council. Clerk has been out sick, but I did ensure that Supervisor Olson did have a message from the mayor confirming their passage of that resolution.
Thanks, Super. Thank you. So to be clear, at this point, the county has approved. So this is a $50,000 local request. Story County has approved $4,505.94 to this point. This is an additional request for $4,580.33, which would cover those smaller towns. It would mean that Ames, Huxley, Nevada, and Story City still need to choose whether they're participating or not on their own dollar. And I hope
and they are.
And they all were are.
Yes.
Which gets us to the $50,000 in order to access another $200,000.
Correct.
What do you have to add before we get into discussion and deliberation?
Thanks to you for suggesting this. It was a great gift to those smaller communities that were uncertain about participating, and it helped them feel like they are simply not on the edges of the needs of affordable housing, but actively recognized as needing the support.
They've got to be part of the answer. Yeah. I mean, if we're going to address this, our smallest communities have to be part of the answer. So thank you very much for what you guys have put in to get this here. Board, questions, comments?
I had asked that you brought some kind of a documentation about from each of the other communities so it could be added to the record, whether it be an email or it be proof of minutes or a copy of the proclamation itself. I assume you have those from the other communities.
And since we received that information 2 days ago,
okay,
that request, we still have to collect that information
right
for you.
Okay, got it. So if we could make sure that we collect it.
So let's just make sure that we get that information when you receive it forwarded to us, just so we can keep that as part of all of our records.
Okay.
Barney, any questions or comments?
Very straightforward.
Sure, take a motion if you guys are ready.
I would move that we approve the entire amount that we had originally discussed, and for both of the years, fiscal year 17 to be dispersed very soon, and fiscal year 18.
Second. Perfect. And just for clarification, that's $4,580.33.
Correct. Thank you.
Motion and second. Further discussion?
None.
Anything to add before we vote? Thank you very much. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It is approved.
Thank you.
You guys have a great day. Thank you for your work on this. Storytime Child Care Center is actually going to come and present to us on June 20th, so we can skip that one. That leads us to consideration of minutes from last week. It's a marathon meeting.
Move consideration of minutes from June 6th.
I second.
Motion is second. Any notations, corrections, additions?
None.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Personnel actions, none today. Consideration of claims for the 15th of this month.
I have a few to pull.
Okay.
First, I would like to pull 6104, which is $220 to 4A Promotions for an advertisement in the Story County, the annual, for the quarterly in the Ames Bulletin Board for the Story County Conservation Board ad. And I still legally own 4A Promotions, so I will not be able to vote on that. So that would need to come out separately.
Okay.
The next group I'd like to pull here is, I'm going to give a list to you, Shelley, okay? And they all have to do, it turns out that there's more than just the Ames one that I talked to you about. That we're going, if you don't mind, we pull separately for approval, would be 6021, which is to the City of Collins, 6024 to the City of Gilbert, 6027 to the city of Huxley, and 6046 to the city of Slater, and then this next list is 6015, the Ames Economic Development Corporation, 6038 to the Nevada Economic Development Corporation, 6048 to the Story City Development Corporation, and there should be one more in there to the Roland Economic Development Corporation. And what I'd like to do with this block is I'd like to go ahead and discuss them separately related to the when we get further down to the Story County Economic Development.
Yeah, so we've got an item on the agenda later today,
right,
asking for these payments to these communities.
Correct.
You want to just hold all these and
yes,
we'll approve it in one fell swoop. We'll go back and do the claims for those.
Correct.
That does not take care of the 4A promotions.
No.
But can I have a motion to approve claims with these removed?
Yes, I would move that we approve the claims with the exceptions I've already noted.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the claims that we're just considering right now?
No.
Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims pass with the noted exceptions. Let's deal with 6104, which is a $220 payment to 4A promotions right now. Supervisor Olson is going to recuse herself since she is an owner of 4A promotions. Marty, questions or a motion?
Motion to approve 6104.
And I'll second. Any discussion?
None.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Olson.
Abstain.
Abstain. 6104 passed. We're going to hold the others dealing with payments to economic development arms of our communities for that conversation later in the agenda. That leads us to the consent agenda.
I so move approval of consent agenda as is.
Yes. Second.
Motion and a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes. We're moving right along, but I have a feeling that that's going to stop. We are now to public hearing items. First public hearing item is consideration to vacate a portion of Old Bloomington Road in Story County. Darren Moon, County Engineer.
Good morning. Okay, I'm expecting this to be pretty straightforward, so I'll go through this fairly quickly. Just stop me if you want me to stop on anything further. Iowa Code 306.10 allows the board the power to establish, alter, or vacate a public roadway, and that's what we're doing today is vacating. Vacating statutes. Just skip through the code sections. At the end of this, we'll open the public hearing for comments on this road vacation. And if it landlocks property, it's not the case here, but I'll get into that a little bit when I show you the pictures. And then there's no action taken today. It's usually a week after, but I'm out of town next week, so it'll be on the 27th. There'll be a resolution on the board's agenda to actually act on the vacation. And then any damages have 20 days to appeal. Initiation of this process was a request from a landowner. The board passed resolution on the 13th to set the hearing date. We've sent our certified mailing copies to the DOT, adjacent landowners, utilities. There is no utilities on the roadway. We did a one call and nothing showed up. So there's no utilities to deal with, and publications have been published. This is where the roadway is. I left this one on there. That's the last road vacation we did at 303rd down south, so that one was left on here. I think, Marty, I think you were here even
yes,
at that time. So you
and 303rd was the road that goes back to where they built the new pump station.
Yes. This is one we're dealing with today, north edge of Ames and the Animal Disease Center. ADC is right here. This is I-35. Technically, there's two different property owners, but I've talked to them and they say it's one and the same. So we're dealing, they do have two different mailing addresses, which is why we were confused, but one goes to the attorney and one goes directly to them. And so this is the roadway right here. The green lines are the road right-of-ways. This is Dayton Road. I zoomed in just a little bit so you could see that Ames City Limits actually goes to the center of the roadway currently. So we are only vacating the north half of the roadway. Talked to the City of Ames about possibly vacating the south half, but that is up to them. Took a picture of it yesterday. I didn't realize it, but they are actually planting in the road right away currently. That's just about the center of the road right away that they're planting up to already. And this is the Disease Labs property line, so that's actually a roadway that the City of Ames has jurisdiction over. Zoom in on that a little further. But there's really no resemblance of a road at all left. So this is the public hearing notice that was published. What type of land is involved? We're pretty much these two of no value except to adjoining landowners and long since having identity as a county land or road. Therefore, I recommend the board quit claim deed, and we don't actually do deeds. We quit claim it by a resolution only. We don't do deeds. And preserving existing utility easements, which there is none, so we have to deal with that. And so you can go ahead and open the public hearing unless you have questions for me first.
Questions to Darren before we open the public hearing?
None.
Okay. We will open the public hearing and ask if there's anybody who would like to address the possible road vacation.
What does vacation sound like?
Road vacation on Old Bloomington Road. And seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll close the public hearing. So the only action that we need to take today is just direction to you to have the ordinance prepared and put on our June 27th
again. By resolution.
By resolution.
So you're just looking for consideration to...
Let's make formal direction to him to get that done.
Well, I would move consideration of the formal vacation of Old Bloomington Road with setting a hearing date of June 27th.
I would second.
So we'll see the resolution on our agenda on the 27th. Chi.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Thanks, Darren.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next public hearing item is consideration of proposed plan specifications and form of contract for phase one of the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor development, authorization to release invitation for bids, and set a bid opening of July 11th, 2017. Mike Cox.
Good morning.
Mike.
Good morning. Good morning. We'll buzz through this pretty quick, too. I think everyone's familiar. We have a master plan that's been accepted for the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. For the last year, we've been working on design elements of that. We have the project broken into three phases. Phase one has been, funding has been provided for phase one. We are at the stage now where we can move ahead with soliciting bids for construction. So this is the master plan for the park. This shows full build out. Of course, the yellow lines are trails. The different colors are either ponds or prairie areas, woodlands, etc. Area will be developed as an outdoor learning corridor, demonstrating best management practices in resource restoration, stream bank stabilization, water quality, and so on. Phase one is stream stabilization. There's some current photos of the existing stream. We've chatted about this in the past, but you'll note a very incised channel and disconnected from the floodplain, i.e. large volume rainfall events do not enter the floodplain in this area because there's so much now capacity in the old in the channels due to erosion. Here's a cross section of the channels. This area, again, used to historically, before anything was developed out here, so native topography in the area was just a swale. There was no regular stream channel. And so now we have a regular stream channel. It has eroded over time to create a situation like this. That erosion is going to stop.
You there, Mike.
What?
What would you say would be the time frame of moving from the swale to what you'd walk out and see today?
Well, I'm going to say in the 1930s photos,
okay.
Which is the farthest back we can go in aerial photos, there was no swale.
There was no swale. There were very few.
I mean, there was a swale at that point.
No difference.
There was no channel, per
okay.
se. Yep.
All right. Thank you.
So, fairly short course of time. The stream's not going to continue to go down any further. It has hit a gravel subbase there. And now, if left to its own devices, what will happen is it will get wider with more erosion because of all of that exposed soil will erode quite easily.
Somebody did the math on how much...
it was like 16,000 dump truck loads.
Has moved out of here.
Has moved out of there. Uh-huh. In just that portion of the park. That's significant. So, again, this is a picture showing those exposed banks and the gravel subbase now that it's at. So, phase one, we had engineering services from those firms listed at the bottom of the slide there. Shive Hattery was our lead engineer. WRT, they are a national firm that does park design. Great Ecology is another national firm that does ecological restorations and particularly streams. So this first phase of the program was engineered primarily by Great Ecology. And so in order to deal with that, there's a number of different ways that we can, quote, stabilize that stream. One of them is peeling back the sides, peeling back the banks to allow a more gradual bank that will that we can get vegetation growth on to stabilize it. Another thing we want to do is reconnect it to the floodplain. And then thirdly is you can look at this and it shows one option is to raise the elevation of the bed. We have, believe it or not, there is a 30-foot elevation difference between the west end of this property and the east end of this property in the stream.
Yeah, so I just want to underscore that again. Because from University
to Riverside,
is 30 feet, you'd never believe it.
Never believe it. But that is the case. And so the phase of this project will both raise the base elevation through a number of grade control structures or riffles. Everything that's designed here is designed to look natural. So ideally at the end of this project, it's not going to look like really we touched that stream. It's going to look more natural. So that's the goal is to set the clock back and do it on a kind of a green approach or a bioengineering approach. So a number of these things are being done. Banks are being peeled back, and the base elevation of those stream beds in some cases is being raised up. All of that will reconnect the floodplain in a particular reach. And I don't want to concern anyone. It's the flooding isn't going to go outside of the reaches of the property, but there will be there's an old wetland that will be restored through this that was the original part of the floodplain, and so this project will restore that wetland.
Yeah, I think the other thing I want to underscore is it's not any one method that we're going to use on this stretch. It's multiple methods in order to demonstrate the different possible ways to deal with something and also check gauge effectiveness.
Correct. So in addition to those grade control structures and in addition to just changing elevation on the banks, we have a number of different, for lack of a better term, bioengineering practices that will be done on those stream banks. There'll be a combination of a number of different things. One's called a wood toed sod mat. Another is just toe protection with boulders. Another is soil lifts with live stakes. And each number of different, like I said, bioengineering techniques that will restore the stream channel or the river banks.
Mike, since I'm hearing wood in a couple of those descriptions, then what would be the kind of the life time of these? Because eventually the water will erode the wood, correct?
Maybe. You know, some of them, for example, I said the wood toe sod mat. Okay, that was one of the terms for one of the practices. And that's essentially a tree trunk that you've cut off. We've got some 20 foot trunks with the root balls attached that we have on site that we harvested from the trees that were there. Mm-hmm. So we're reusing materials on the site. And so you'll tow in or key in that trunk into the bank and leave the root ball sticking out into the channel. And that deflects the fall leg. Essentially, that's the main current or the main channel in the stream where you get the most velocities and the most shear pressures. And so that'll divert that fall leg away from the bank so you won't have erosion on the bank. And really, it's a new practice, but our engineers are thinking that we've got a good 25 plus year life out of that.
Okay.
So even though it is wood, mm-hmm. yes, we do have a sizable amount of lifespan out of that. But you're absolutely right in that over time, some of that will deteriorate, and so we're hoping that in the process of that, we're getting vegetation established at the same time, that when that let's say 25-30 years down the road, we don't have that root ball sticking there anymore, but we've got a stabilized bank at that point. Does that make sense?
Well, and hopefully at that point we've got a healthy, sustainable stream
mm-hmm.
that we're just working on maintaining.
Correct.
In its native state. Right now we don't have it.
Correct. And also by that time, in order to get there, those grade stabilizations, or the riffles, if you will, have changed the elevation of the,
right.
of the bottom of that stream, so you don't have all the same erosive powers that you used to have.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. That was a great explanation.
In a nutshell here, we've this shows the cost opinion on the project. It shows the expenses of $1.67 million. And a revenue of 1.704. So it shows that as of right now, we've got a difference of 37,000 to the positive from our engineer's cost opinion on this project. And so a little bit of the timeline here. We're anticipating a bid opening on July 11th. Award a contract the following week with substantial completion for some aspects of the project. So the earthwork substantial completion will be December, and the seeding and planting substantial completion will be March. Now what I'm asking for is your consideration to release these bids, to go ahead and get bids on the project. And I'm asking for that consideration pending final legal review of the bid documents and bid contract forms. We're still waiting on that. Anticipate that to happen in the next week, and then we can release it. If you so choose to authorize it.
And that's the recommendation from the Conservation Board last night, who took exactly the same action.
Correct.
But first, we got to open the public hearing. Questions for Mike before we open the public hearing?
Nobody does a good job of presenting. There's nothing I got any questions on.
Good. In that case, yeah, absolutely. We will open the public hearing and ask if there's anybody who would like to address anything about the Tedesco Park, but most specifically, the idea of soliciting bids to do this first phase of work. Public hearing is open. And seeing no one jumping up immediately and heading to the microphone, we'll close the public hearing. I'll turn to the board for action. I'll just underscore that legal has not been able to completely review the bid packet at this point. Conservation is recommending that we go ahead and get this approved pending approval by the county attorney.
I would move that we approve release of the bid packet information pending legal approval.
All right, second.
We got a motion and a second. Further discussion. Mike, anything to add?
Nope.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. So we'll look for bid opening on July 11th.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Good job. That does it for public hearing items today. Next item on our agenda is additional items, and it's discussion and consideration of awarding the Leadership Nevada Scholarship to Erin Reworks and having her participation in the Leadership Nevada be during normal scheduled work hours and her work time. Alyssa Wignall. So the board referred this to you several weeks ago when we determined that we would in fact support Leadership Nevada, and one of the things that came with our support is one scholarship to attend. We ask you to reach out to staff and ask for nominations and come back to us with a recommendation.
Yes, and that's what we did, and so we received applications. They were due the end of May, or that Friday, might have been June 1st. And then Deb Schildroth, Leanne Harder, and I met last Tuesday and reviewed the applications that we received and came forward with a recommendation to the board to approve Erin Reworks as the county, as the employee from the county that would attend this. I did put the information from her application out there. It was very well written. So if you guys have any questions, I'd be happy to answer any about the process.
Questions for Alyssa?
I had none. I did understand the process. I think that the committee was very fair in looking for it. Erin, I also thought it was very well written, and I appreciated your introspection there and saying, hey, this is where I think I can serve my community, and this will help with my confidence to do that. I thought that was just very open and unique. So congratulations on the nomination, at least until we vote, okay?
And the other thing is to determine whether during the scheduled work hours, whether there's...
Right, are we asking her to take vacation to participate? This is Fridays, right?
I don't have that schedule in front of me, but there's
probably
a few different days.
And so it'd be a few work days that she would miss. I believe it was our intent, while we haven't formalized that yet, that you would not be taking vacation to participate in this. This is training that we look for. So if there's no thought, I'd take a motion to approve Erin and to have... her be able to use work time in order to participate in Leadership Nevada.
I move consideration of awarding Nevada scholarship to Erin Reavers and her participation during normally scheduled hours to be considered work time.
I would second that.
Motion and second. Further discussion. Unless anything to add.
The only thing we'll have to add after this is done is I believe there's an application that Erin will have to fill out and submit to Leadership Nevada.
Okay.
All right. And I have that. I can forward it on to
her. Outstanding. She.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Erin, thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. The next item is discussion and consideration of retiree health insurance continuation policy pursuant to Iowa Code 509A for 7-day review.
7-day review has been, I've requested it's waived.
Okay.
I think that's what the agenda said.
It does.
Okay, perfect. There is a section in the Iowa Code that allows employees to remain on the employer's group health plan after they retire, and a retiree is they are retired from employment and they are receiving their IFRS pension. So there are a few things in the Iowa Code that do that. What this policy does in front of you, it tells you how we administer that portion of the code and how it interacts with COBRA. So So when an employee retires, that is a COBRA qualifying event. But they can waive COBRA and elect to take advantage of this, the retiree insurance through Iowa Code 509A. Most of the time they will do that because it's longer. You get more than your 18-month coverage under the group health plan. But there are some situations in this policy that states why they may want to consider taking COBRA instead of this option. So what this does, this two-and-a-half-page document in the form will go out to the individual at the same time the COBRA notice goes out to them, and they would elect. So if they elect the retiree insurance under Iowa Code 509A, they are waiving their COBRA rights at that point.
So by adopting this, when it goes to 65, there's no COBRA availability?
Correct.
Okay. Make the motion.
Move consideration of a retiree health insurance continuation policy pursuant to Iowa Code 509A, and I would waive our 7-day review process.
I second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Unless anything to add.
One thing I do want to add, this is separate from any early retiree policy that we have where the county would pay for portions. Completely separate. This is just what the code says they can do and how we administer that section of the code.
Absolutely.
Yep.
We also have that as part of some of our existing bargaining units.
Yep.
And this is separate from any of that.
Separate. Yep.
I'll say, Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Next item is consideration of authorization for Emmons and Oliver, EOR, to subcontract some of the services. So we awarded them a contract to do our watershed analysis of our HUC 10s and 12s. And they want to subcontract to Prairie Rivers. We ask that we be given the authority to approve the subcontracting of this contract. Leanne Hart.
Good morning, Leanne.
Good morning. I really don't have much to add other than the stigma about some requests from Pat Conrad, who's a principal of EOR, with whom we've been working, we did a discussion with Ethan Anderson, the county attorney's office. The RFP that was released did say if the selected vendor may not subcontract any of the work specified in the RFP without prior written consent of Story County. Ethan's recommendation that come before the Board of Supervisors. Supervisor Olson did ask for some additional information from EOR as to why this plan was being put in place to subcontract to Prairie Rivers of Iowa, and I did give each of you a copy of that, Mr. Conrad's response.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any questions for me?
Not questions so much as, I would request that you read the paragraph as to his reasoning for asking for the subcontract, and then I have some comments.
Go ahead.
Okay. Hope my voice will help. just starting with originally?
Yes, please.
Originally, we had submitted a scope of work directly to the county, which included time for an EOR mid-level scientist to conduct the ACPF analysis. When the scope was not accepted and the county went out to bid, my assumption was that that was due, at least in part, to the cost of our scope. When the work was put out for bid, I decided I needed to look for ways to decrease the cost of the project, and the ACPF analysis was the obvious element. At the time of the proposal submittal, we were debating three alternatives: subcontracting with PRI, working with the flood center over at University of Iowa, or hiring a temporary entry-level employee at EOR to do the work. The EOR option was the most attractive to us, but really hinged on our ability to land a couple other projects that required ACPF work. We recently determined that we were not going to get these additional ACPF projects, so we turned to Plan B, which was to subcontract PRI. We are confident that they are well trained in the tool set and will provide the county with an excellent product. We will be involved in the process, providing QA, QC, and interpreting, mapping the results.
Okay. Thank you. And the reason I asked for this additional information is that my memory serves at the time that we put this out that EOR bid was significantly lower. than the other two people who did bid, and also that it was pointed out rightfully that EOR was already doing work for us in the county, and therefore there would be economies of scale. Okay. And so when I saw this request come for the subcontracting, I felt for the sake of transparency that we needed to get their thinking about this. I'm comfortable with his explanation about how this has come to be, but I just felt it needed to be on the record. So given the fact that of the circumstances I've already listed. So with that, I would move that we accept or allow the subcontracting with PRI.
Super. Thank you. We have a motion.
I accept that, and thank you for walking us through it. I just was wondering what you were, where you were going.
That's
and
right.
You have a foundation, and you walked us to the conclusion. So good on you.
So your acceptance is a second.
Yeah, acceptance is a
further
second.
Further discussion.
None.
Lee, anything to add?
No.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. It passed. The subcontracting between EOR and Prairie Rivers is accepted by this board. Next item is consideration of FY17 disbursement allocation as recommended by the Story County Economic Development Group. Jennifer Davies is here with us today. We also have some claims that we're going to deal with as part of this process.
Good morning, Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer.
So you guys have in front of you the disbursement and the spreadsheet as to how that disbursement was allocated. I guess I would open it up to questions and discussion of what.
My initial question in sending out was $45,000, 500 and some odd dollars, okay, is an Ames part of the allocation that is going directly to the Ames Economic Development Corporation. And while it was not known to Jennifer and the Story County Economic Group, I'd actually questioned this a few months ago about why it didn't go first to the City of Ames and then to have City of Ames disperse it. Because there were some of the disbursements that actually go to the city itself. And then I was advised, go look, there are also additional disbursements where they go to the Economic Development Group. So, and then others who do not have a defined Economic Development Group are getting the city information. And documentation seemed to be hard to find on this. It's just, the answer was, this is the way it's always been done. So my first question is, did you find the documentation, Jennifer, or did anybody come up with documentation?
Of why it goes directly to...
Yeah, of why we are paying out the way we are, that some of these amounts are going to the Economic Development Corporations while others are going to the city.
They were members as of this group. They were coming to the meetings as the Economic Development Groups and as Ames Chamber. They were the ones attending the meetings. They've been ones putting in the certifications that they were the members versus the city. Because I had an economic development group set up, so in the previous bylaws, that was the way it was allowed. You could be a member.
It's the branch, it's the arm providing economic development services for a municipality that were members of this group. If they didn't have a formal structure, this is back when Howard Hammond set this 25 years ago, they didn't have the formal separate structure for the municipality, but were participating, then the payment went right to the municipality.
Correct.
So this is how the communities represent themselves to Story County Economic Development Group.
Correct.
So I am fully prepared to move that we go with the disbursements for all that I pulled out separately, and I do believe I missed the City of Collins. Sorry about that. We already approved that one. Okay. All right. But what I'm going to ask for next year is that there be a memo that comes forward explaining this, and maybe even someone locate the original documents, just so that we've gone back with documentation every so often, the actual documentation. I'm very comfortable with the written or the verbal explanations that have come forward here, but it seems like these disbursements of such, given that there are multiple entities involved, some are going straight to a city, some are going to an economic development group. If I had a question, and I've actually been attending this group on and off for years as an observer, it never hurts to do some documentation with a disbursement every year, especially of almost, $88,000 total.
100 total.
Oh, 100. That's true, because it includes the pool. So 100. So so that's all I'm asking, is that for going forward.
So we've already got a mechanism, I think, to do this, Jennifer. So every year, this economic development group asks each municipality to identify who their representatives are.
With our new bylaws that we passed last fall.
Okay.
And we're accepted.
And it just seems to me you can also suggest, say, each municipality can say, these are our representatives, and this is where any payment to our community should be directed.
That works also.
Okay.
You're just asking the economic development to do this.
Yeah.
That's on them.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm not talking to Laura. You're asking them to do this.
Yeah, I'm asking you to do that going forward. And with that, I would move the approval of those claims that we previously pulled related to economic development. First of all, and then I'm going to come back and move.
Okay. All right, so we got a motion to approve all those claims that we pulled earlier.
Second.
The motion is second. Before we approve that, Jennifer, so this is the per capita amount that is being distributed to cities, which is the same for every municipality on a per capita basis, is substantially different than it's been the last couple of years.
It has. It is.
Will you take us through what the changes are?
The biggest change is attendance in our meetings. When I started 10 years ago, I did a quick check. There were 7 and every once in a while 8 communities attending these meetings on an annual basis out of the 15 in the county. Now we have 14 out of 15 there on a regular basis. Unfortunately, Colo did miss some attendance, so they didn't get funding this year. They are the only community that did not, except for the city of Shelville, who has never attended in the 10 years I've participated, even though we have reached out. And then with the change of, so that was a big change of how the disbursement change is adjusted, because we take the entire amount available and divide it so that we use the full 100,000.
Super. So more people,
more communities
reduce the amount per person.
Correct. And then we also, with the new bylaws we passed, it also changed the base that some of the communities were getting. Some of the communities didn't have their certification, which means they weren't doing the requirements to be a member of the group. Having a brochure or doing any kind of economic development efforts, that they had proof that they were doing something like that. So with the new bylaws, everybody, there was like 3 communities that didn't have their certification in the last couple of years, which also, so that changed. That takes $2,000 to each of those communities that didn't have that before, where they were just getting per capita, even though they were attending and didn't have the other. So
okay.
It pulls I know that makes a huge difference for Ames, because I believe previously they were receiving over $50,000. So it made a big change for them.
Well, percentage-wise, it should hit everybody in a similar way, right?
Yes, it did.
Unless your population changed dramatically.
City Slater was reduced from last year as well. So, yep.
Okay. Other questions before we vote on the claims?
None.
Okay, so just to take us back, we are now voting on claims 6021, 6024, 6027, 6046, 6015, 6038, and 6048, all payments represented in this. We have a motion and a second. Further discussion on that. Olson.
Aye.
Chi.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Those claims passed. Now we need to deal with what's in front of us from Jennifer, which is the actual disbursement
schedule. I move consideration of the FY17 disbursement allocations as recommended for Astoria County Economic Development Group.
I second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion?
None.
Chi.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. It passes. Was there anything else we were supposed to accomplish today?
No, thank you for that.
Jennifer, did we get done what we're supposed to get done for you?
Yep.
Outstanding. Okay. Next is discussion and consideration of amendments to the bylaws and program guidelines of the Story County Economic Development Group. Jennifer.
We made a couple of minor changes from our bylaws that we passed last fall. Going through the process, one of them was to change the resolution of the person who should be attending and being at the meetings from January 1st to June 1st so that it accommodates the fiscal year versus the calendar year. And the other one was our pool funds. We set a maximum. Yeah, we set a maximum amount that any community could receive from those pool funds, grant dollars from this group, and also set a cap for only one request being made, because we did run into a community who made four requests. So.
So each community gets to make one request per year, and there's a maximum dollar amount, which there was not before.
Correct.
Okay.
And it then runs a fiscal year that matches the county's fiscal year.
Yep.
Okay. And has this been presented to the group, and did the group vote affirmatively on it?
Yes, they did. Unanimously at their May meeting.
Good. Questions?
Jennifer, you and I, when we spoke on the phone about the other situation, also discussed back to Article 1. And it's at the top of page, they're not numbered. Okay, so 1, 2, at the top of page 2, the continuation in that first paragraph, and it laid out what the voting member should be. There should be someone from, and it lists several groups, and then it says, it may not be someone representing the county in any manner. Okay, and you had asked then how we get into a situation if both the county and, say, the city of Ames have a contract. I think the question was with the Ames Economic Development Corporation. And it's my understanding that the AEDC has addressed that by making their primary contact now, which would be Brenda Dreyer, a non-voting member. Are you aware of that?
I was not, no.
Okay, all right.
So is there, I guess, as a chairperson for the group, I guess I would like clarification as to who is representing the city of Ames or the Ames Chamber as a voting member, because if they're not there or as a voting member, they're also not there to receive funding because the attendance isn't there either.
I think whoever's on Ames' list. That, so Ames puts in a list, and whoever's on
puts
that
in
list.
Their resolution as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
Right.
And I haven't seen their resolution either.
Okay.
Unless it came directly to the Board of Supervisors.
Mm-hmm. I didn't come to me. Didn't come to Rick. No. So I see Brenda kind of wiggling there in the audience.
Yeah, come on up, Brenda.
Yeah.
Good morning again.
Good morning.
And as you all were reviewing the contract early on, we caught the same instance. And I believe that Ames did act on their resolution during April, you know, shortly after I started. And we just need to track down where that went to. But Ames, Gilbert, and Maxwell all did theirs shortly in April sometime. So I do know that the city council has appointed Drew.
Okay.
And that I will not have any representation from any community because I'm
serving all
as a resource for everybody.
Yep. Does that answer your question, Laura?
It does. I think it clears up. Thank you very much.
Anything else that we need to know? If not, I would take a motion to approve the request to change the bylaws.
Move consideration of the amendments of the bylaws and program guidelines from the Economic Development Group as presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion. Jennifer Lee, anything to add?
No.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. They have both items passed.
Thank you for what you do.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
It's in addition to what you do for Slater, but I appreciate what you do here.
Okay.
Next item is discussion and consideration of Kegley Branch Watershed Management Authority. Actually, we just received some proposed revisions from the City of Ames, which have not made it to County Attorney yet. I would suggest that we postpone any action on this until County Attorney has an opportunity to review the requested revisions from the City of Ames.
Do you want a motion to table that, bring it back?
Sure.
I move that we table item 6, the discussion and consideration of the Kegley Branch Watershed Management Authority 2080 agreement, and we bring that back to us pending as a legal counsel, and I think we probably set a date on that for next week.
Okay.
Well, they are getting there in, I know Ethan has gone all week, correct? So it'd be Gary who would look at it then?
Are we good with it next week if we get it to Gary?
Yeah, so I let's give them a little more time sometime prior to the 27th.
When are you going to make it to the 27th?
Yeah, that's the next
week. That'd be 2 weeks
until.
Until the Story County
Attorney. County Attorney has not reviewed.
My motion would reflect the 27th then.
Okay.
I would second.
We have a motion in the second table. There's no discussion there. Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It is tabled pending review by the County Attorney. Next is discussion consideration of Heartland Senior Services request to carry forward $12,000 from FY 17 to FY 18. That showed up in Nancy Carroll. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
In February, Heartland Senior Services had contacted members of the asset administrative team about the drawdowns for fiscal year 17. And they had found out that they had miscalculated units of service, and which ended up significantly decreasing their unit rate for the current fiscal year. And so they met with the administrative team. We looked at that. They had concerns about not being able to draw down all their funds with this reduced rate. And what we asked Heartland to do at that time was proceed with billing at that rate because we were expecting to see some kind of an increase in total units provided as a result of how home-delivered meals were going to be handled and more outreach going to those individuals once the meals were delivered. It's been communicated that the city funds have all been exhausted, and so there's approximately $20,000 left of county funding for fiscal year 17 for service coordination for outreach services. Now, we have received May and June, projected June bills, which will bring that amount then down to $12,000. And so the request is to move that $12,000, carry that forward into fiscal year 18. The unit rate for this current year is about half of what it really should be, but we've corrected that in the contract for fiscal year 18.
And so even with this $12,000 moved into 18, do we have enough dollars there with the difference in rate?
Yes.
To provide the
services?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Typically, Heartland has utilized all of these funds for service coordination by March or April of each fiscal year. But with the calculation being the way that it was, it looks a little off.
Okay. Outstanding. Nancy, anything to add?
No. Thank you very much, and thank you, Deb, for sharing.
Outstanding. Questions?
None. Great story. We have the opportunity to provide funds out of this year and the next for an organization that we use them wisely.
Mm-hmm.
I have no questions.
Would you make a motion?
I would. I would so move that we move the $12,000 as recommended. And let's see, that's from outreach, correct, into the meals program.
No. Just fiscal years.
Yes.
Outreach. Okay. Into fiscal year 18.
Correct.
Motion and a second to move that $12,000 into FY18. Further discussion?
No.
Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you. Powerful
Thank you.
Our plan.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we're going to hold discussion consideration of our three applicants, for one for asset and two for the VA commission, until 11:30. So that takes us to item number 11, which is discussion consideration of relocation assistance for Crestview Mobile Home Park residents.
Carla. Okay, so if you recall, I think it was back in February, we had closed the Crestview Relocation Assistance. And it's our understanding that the current property owner is planning to liquidate the property. So I wanted to come back and visit with you today regarding reopening that relocation assistance, as I think there will be individuals who could benefit from that as they look to move. And so I've provided a few options there, I guess, for consideration, if you will. The relocation assistance that we did have available was $1,000, up to $1,000 per occupied mobile home. We had a modified application that we had folks fill out, and we did request at that time that they exhaust all the other community options that are out there. The second option that I put there was to look at increasing the relocation assistance amount above the $1,000, consideration to either include, again, where individuals need to access all the other community options, or waive that option at this time for those folks who, I think it would make it easier for them as they work through that process to get relocated. And then continue to waive our regular general assistance requirements. And then option three there was an option where we could look at if an individual is moving their mobile home. We know that there are going to be some elevated costs for that, so maybe a cap of $3,000 if that's what the individual is doing, or if they're planning to relocate to an apartment or house and rent. Look at a cap of $2,000. Again, there could include that they exhausted all the other options in the community or waive those options as well. One thing in looking at number three that I could see potentially could come up where it could get maybe a little tricky in managing is if a person identifies that they're planning to move their mobile home, so then they would be qualifying for that $3,000 cap. Maybe things fall through and it doesn't work out, and they're then looking to move into an apartment, that kind of thing. Then that drops it down to that $2,000 cap. So that would be something we would have to work with them on managing, if that were to be the option.
And so the last time this was approved by the board, it included things like moving expenses. Did we include a rent component in that, and was there a time frame on it?
We did include rent assistance. It was up to the $1,000. So it was that first month of move-in. We could help with the deposit in that first month's worth of rent. So it wasn't ongoing rental assistance. It was just the one time. We also paid for storage units for a couple of individuals, paid to have a tongue welded back on a mobile home so that it could get moved. So yeah, it was really it was really open to whatever that person needed. We required that it was reimbursement to the vendor, so we did not pay reimbursement to an individual for maybe items that they paid for themselves. So we had to work with the vendor.
And we also required that they exhaust all other avenues for community resources, knowing that there are some out there, so that this would be in addition to those, not instead of.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. Board.
Touching on that one, on the community resources, who else do you see being at the table to help these folks in relocating?
Some of the options that are out there on an ongoing basis for individuals, emergency residence projects, Salvation Army, Good Neighbor Emergency Assistance, Christ Community Church. They had a lot of individuals, I believe, that helped people in physically moving their items. So it may not have been monetary assistance, but they provided volunteers. You know, and I know that there likely are churches and that may step up and have their own programs that they operate where they could assist folks. St. Thomas Aquinas, a Catholic church, also has funds.
I would be involved through the Board of Health on this item. We have a finite set of people this applies to, and I would not want to see us really, I mean, at some point, if somebody does take us up as if we were to approve this and going, I'm not looking to leave this as an open-ended backfill for somebody else. I think this applies to the people that are there clearly on the date of adoption, because I think there's a loop system available to the owner of this facility that I'm sure that he would be quick to fill it with somebody else, and then I would think that we would be leaking dollars to somebody that just virtually got here, as opposed to somebody that we have probably had there. I mean, we have run across people with, you know, upwards of a decade plus of living in this facility, and I think those are the people that we stand prepared to help, not somebody that gets here, you know, after the fact. So what I'm looking for is a little bit more of a date certain application, as opposed to somebody that shows up, say, in July, August, September, October, because as it was presented to the Board of Health here last week, it was the proposal was 9 to 12 months to closure. I think the counter was 6 months. So I would think that I would ask if Carlo could be helpful in determining who, in fact, is there and who, in fact, we could help, and not necessarily be in a position that if somebody shows up after the fact that we're looking to help somebody relocate that just got there a month or two subsequent.
And I think tied into that is kind of a date, a period when people can apply, and also an end when the assistance is no longer available. That ties right into that. As we go out, find out who's there now, say, set a date, you have until this date to use our money, which also helps facilitate that people start looking. Now, I'm not talking about 60 days, but I am talking about that we make them realize that they can't move out the day before literally the park is, I mean, before Brant's done closing it and putting it up for auction, right? That we want to set some kind of reasonable time frame for them to start going through this process. I have another issue here about, are we going to give it to anyone who, as of the date that Carla goes out, or we determine how we're going to say these are the people who are going to get it, okay? What do we do about the people who may be living there who supposedly, according to the landlord, are not living there? I was told at a meeting last Thursday that another housing-related social service group, a nonprofit in town, as of 2 weeks ago, were able to pretty much, their members verify that those three units that were supposedly being used only as storage but had the electricity hooked up were in fact still being occupied. So we've got the people who are on the loop who we know are there or they're hooked up, but then we may have some other people who still actually are using that for their residents. I think it would be a small number of people, but I think that will factor into whoever we help and possibly even the timing.
Yep. Okay. So I agree completely with the idea that there should be a date certain for when you needed to be a resident of the park in order to qualify. I would suggest that's June 1st of this year. So it just happened. It means that we might have some that just came in. But what I want to be careful with, in government, we all love these rules and regulations and date certain, but the reality of what we're trying to do here, I believe, is recognize that these are our most vulnerable citizens. And these are citizens frankly, they probably don't have a whole lot of options in terms of where they're living, or they wouldn't be living in Crestview right now. And so our intent here, and I believe it's a great intent, is to assist these individuals who don't have great options with finding that next location that they're going to live, so that we don't end up with a bunch of people with nowhere to live, with in terrible situations. And so I'm really hesitant to put a whole lot of requirements on. I heard you say, Loris, we don't want you waiting until right till the end, you know, the day before the park closes. Well, those are the individuals that I'm most worried about, the ones that are going to hang on and hang on and hang on, and then all of a sudden they don't have anywhere to live anymore. Mm-hmm. What are we doing then? So what I'm suggesting is that we put a date certain in terms of when you had to be a resident of the park. And I picked June 1st just because it's the most recent month behind us. Mm-hmm. It opens the door. I don't think you have to be on the loop. I think if you can verify that you have been, in fact, residing at Crestview, we want to help you move on. I think we ought to put a dollar amount that applies to everybody regardless of what the circumstances are. I don't want to get into all moving a trailer, no, I'm not moving a trailer. Some dollar amount, but at least for specific items. And we need to get those really laid out. If it's a month's rent, that's great, but that's not 2 months' rent. Or if it's 2 months' rent, why is it the first 2 months' rent? We need to lay all that out. And then the third thing is, I believe that we need to organize a community meeting at George Valetsos' property, who lives right across the street from Crestview. I know we would not be allowed to have it on the Crestview property, so have it as close as possible, where we invite that list of other community support entities that Carla listed, along with maybe a few more, and we get there and we try to make it as easy as possible for the people that are residents there to access any of these services that are available to them. That's my three thoughts on this.
Coming back to one amount, though, I like the proposal about the mobile home moving, getting extra money, and here's why. Back to, we know the people who are still there at this point are the ones who did that, probably, maybe did, could not afford to move before, and I believe that we recently heard or possibly read in the paper that lot rent is $200 a month. So anybody who moves to an apartment is realistically going to be looking at their rent doubling to tripling, correct? Okay. So there may be some people who literally, because of their fixed income, may have to move that mobile home. They are not even going to be able to continue to go beyond a month or two in an apartment. And so I think that home is a viable option if those people can find some place to put it. So that's why I would go for the 3,000.
I didn't suggest anything that limited the 3,000. Lower than that. I said a set amount, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not suggesting for a second that we wouldn't include somebody moving their mobile home as an allowable expense. All I'm saying is if our maximum is $3,000, mm-hmm, and it only applies to these items, right? It can be a rent deposit, first month's rent, storage unit, actual rental of the moving truck or whatever, moving the mobile home, but it's up to $3,000 for everybody, and you, based on what your actual costs are, you can qualify for that. I'm just more comfortable with that than saying, well, if you're moving a mobile home, there's extra money in it for you.
Okay.
I just want it to be real and actual expenses. I want it to be the same for everybody.
Okay.
We, going through this process the last several months, it, on the determination of who owns what trailer, sometimes it turns into just a almost anecdotal on a legality that it is awful tough. We have struggled mightily in the treasurer's office, and everybody that has gone out there would tell you their tale of woe. It's a hardship. Some of these trailers, frankly, are not DOT transportable. Now, whether somebody owns clear title to them, they may not be able to leave because they are not going to be sufficiently able to leave. So I get the trailer side of things, but clearly some of these trailers have gone through their service life. I guess I would be more comfortable on a fixed amount, saying that since we are going to be making payment to the vendor proper, not through the residents of the park, mm-hmm. we, you know, in their behalf, we will be the pass-through agency to allocate these funds to facilitate a move. And I like the idea of a public meeting because I like to think these people could have the comfort to be brought out in a position where they can speak. Mm-hmm. I think they have stories to tell, and I think that we have the opportunity to possibly maybe get some successes out of these people as they transition from there. But I think this is something clearly that circumstances, it has come to this point. Last year was the Board of Health and the supervisors were looking at a position where they were looking for park stabilization. We find ourselves a year later looking at park closure. And I think our approach should reflect that.
I agree completely. The other thing that I want to underscore and the other reason that I think a public meeting out there that's very accessible to those that reside there, I absolutely believe that they're not getting an accurate story. I think that they're being told that Story County is closing this down, and it's all Story County's decision, and tough luck. If you want to be mad at somebody, be mad at Story County, when in reality all we're trying to do is help. And I want to make sure that those individuals that are there at least have the opportunity to hear what's really going on and what's available to them. So I would suggest, just to get specific, I would suggest that we set a maximum of $3,000 for anybody who is a verified resident as of June 1st, 2017 or before, that there not be a timeline, that this is open until the Board of Supervisors decides to close it at some point in the future, and that we request that Carla put together a list of approvable expenses that we would approve as part of this for us to approve at a later date.
Could we have a little more discussion on verified?
That was not a motion. Okay. That was my suggestion of where I would like to see us head.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The verifiable comes back to the people who we already know in one instance, based upon press coverage, a person is living there and not well, unfortunately, but living there. So how are we going to go verified with, I'm not willing to rely upon the landlord saying who lives there or not.
We're counting on our staff to verify that they have, in fact, been living there. We're not looking for an electricity bill. We're asking Carla and her staff to say, we really believe this person has been living there.
Physically go out there then, or?
We could potentially do that if we can get, to the property access and everything. Before we did get a list of names from the landlord on who was out there, that was helpful because we could then kind of match it up when somebody was coming in, and it helped us to know who we might be missing. It could be helpful if they do provide us a utility bill or something that's in their name, just to say, yes, I am at this address. But I think, too, through conversation, you can generally tell if somebody is.
Okay, because that may be for at least these three groups. I mean, that may be the only way is to converse with them.
Yeah,
we'll be having that. Whenever somebody applies, we're meeting with them, we're sitting down, and we're having a conversation, we're doing an interview, talking about the process. So I think through that, we'd be able to tell if somebody is out there.
Would we be able to access the post office and ask for people who they have service to in that park? Would that be appropriate? Because
I think post office would be really hesitant to
give us any contact information.
I'm completely comfortable with Carla and her staff having a conversation with these people, and I would hope that if there's gray area, we're going to err on the side of assisting these citizens. I mean, that's what this is intended to do.
Right.
These are public dollars that we're talking about spending, and I think it's a wise use of public dollars. Because what happens to our community if we're not prepared to step in these kind of situations? So those are my suggestions with where I'd like to see us head.
Okay. I'm very comfortable with those.
You're okay with $3,000?
Oh, yeah.
That's a list
of the qualified, because that would include moving or mobile home, if it's movable.
Well, and so here's the reality of what we saw the last time we did this. Mm-hmm. We thought we were dealing with a universe of somewhere in the neighborhood of 30, mm-hmm. right? We ended up with how many people that actually applied, actually went through the process and received dollars? How many?
Eight households that completed the entire process.
And that's in a universe of 30-something. Right. Now we're talking about we're in a universe of 12 that we know of, but call it 15. Mm-hmm. It's not like we're in this universe where we're talking about 100 different possibilities of somebody coming forward. It's a limited number. Only some are going to take advantage of this anyway. So let's say that we put the whole $3,000 in for all 15, which I think would be great. That means they're moving on to somewhere hopefully stable. That's still just $45,000, which is less or similar to what we talked about budgeting the last time.
Yeah, it's $31,000 the first time through.
One other thing, I see our animal control director is now here for another agenda item, but Sue, given, I know you can't say with certainty, but based upon what our guest count is, our resident count at any given day, but do you think that the shelter might be able to offer assistance if some people need to board their animals for a while?
We don't have a boarding license through the Department of Agriculture. We can't board animals as such.
Right.
We would offer to, we've been going kind of through there off and on just to watch the animal count. Usually it's a cat home. We haven't seen that many. I don't know if they've dispersed or what's happened. Mm-hmm. People have actually taken it. What we would offer to do is if people got into a situation where the only apartment or wherever they could get was one that did not allow pets, then we'd be able to help them with that transition,
right,
taking the animals in and doing another option.
Okay, so we can't board them, but we could put them up for adoption if needed. Then back to the list for Carla then, okay. For some people, a high priority might be a few weeks boarding at a kennel that has a license.
I think that's a reasonable expense.
Okay.
The other thing is then we've got the animal identified, and if they move on to a situation where the animal's not keepable, then all of a sudden we can step in as appropriate.
Okay, great.
All right, so good. Are we ready to make a motion?
Could I make a request in there,
sure,
to can you identify if an individual needs to exhaust all of the community options before accessing the relocation assistance, or if that would be waived at this time?
Yeah, so talk us through it. My inclination would be that they should, in fact, utilize other community resources. This is intended to be that bottom-end safety net, not intended to supplement anything up top, at least as I see it. Speak to us about your feelings on this. Does it make it more complex for you?
It does. It creates some additional steps. Could slow things down a little bit for a person because we're needing to verify that they have gone to all of those other options first. And that takes some doing on their part to get that all accomplished.
Okay.
One thing about it is if we bypass that down the road, if they need assistance, they can then go to those agencies for that help. Some of the agencies, they can only assist once in a year. And so it leaves those options open for them down the road if that is needed.
So that's good enough for me. Like I say, we're not, I don't believe, trying to make this more difficult.
Right, and I agree, and then that's back to, this is going to be enough of a shift monetarily for some of them as is, to maybe have to go rely further down the road.
Yesterday, the treasurer's office had a reach out from a gentleman at the park that was looking to know what it would take to get his trailer transportable and whatnot. So, and he related to the treasurer's office, Rhonda downstairs, that the discussion was being had today. The collective residents there know that this is in the offing, and you might have some people prior to us even implementing anything and making plans to relocate. So, but I think this is something worthy of doing. I guess on the bullet points, I'm not going to make the motion, but of course, you're always up for that.
Okay. I need to remind you on these bullet points, but let's see. I move that we offer an amount of up to $3,000 assistance per trailer, not resident, but trailer, that we can be verified by community services staff, that for residents at the trailer at the park, verified as of June 1st, right? And that we waive the requirement to access other community resources. Good on my list so far?
So far, yep, good.
Okay, all right. And that community services put together a list of qualified services and assistance. And help me out. I drew a blank.
We would like to make a meeting.
Oh, yes. And that we work towards setting a meeting with the residents, preferably at the acreage across from the park owned by George Belitzos and Peter Wolf, who have already agreed verbally to host this meeting.
We just need to firm up the date.
Okay. At a date to be determined later. Mm-hmm. Good so far?
Mm-hmm. That sounds like your motion.
Okay, yep. That's my motion.
Okay. Marty, you willing to second that?
I'm just thinking, just give me mine and say the same thing.
Okay, I'm looking at my notes.
I think that would be a catch-all, taking into account Carla. I guess I would think that, Carla, I would offer my help if you want to go in to make a determination on a door-to-door basis who's there and whatnot. I spend a lot of time in there already. Go again. I second Loris's motion.
All right, so June 1st, maximum $3,000, a list of approved possible expenditures to be developed by community services, approved by this board as soon as you can put together that list, and it will pull together a public meeting that would include us as well as other entities that may be able to help at a later date. Did we hit all you needed?
Yes.
And waive the
option to have utilized all those other resources. But we want to stay in reasonable communication with all those other options. They need to be aware of what's going on.
Okay.
That cover it?
Covers it.
Further discussion?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
It is approved as stated.
Thank you, Carla.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carla.
Okay. I'll try and get that list to you next week.
Okay. I just want to say thank you to Marty, to Ethan, to, I know Deb has been out there, Carla's been out there, everybody. I think the Sheriff's Department who has gone out there, and Margaret and Environmental Health, Jerry's in the back, Planning and Development, to everyone who has gone out there in an effort to get this situation rectified and for everybody to be able to move on. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a lot of work to do.
Yeah, but we're not done.
We're getting going. Good job. Okay, so now we're going back up the agenda to item number 8, which is discussion and consideration of applicant Eric Alwin for vacancies on assets. So we have 2 vacancies on assets. We're going to interview one person today, and I believe we've got one person to interview next week. So we can, if we so choose, go ahead and take action for this one position today. Eric, I had you come up. Thank you so much for being here. So this is intended to be a conversation between you and the board on your interest and skill set for serving on asset. Clearly the asset board is one of the most well-functioning boards anywhere in the state and provides a really unique service to Story County and the City of Ames in partnership with United Way and the region and student government of Iowa State. We're so appreciative that you're interested in serving. What can you tell us about yourself?
I currently work at Mary Greeley Hospital. I think I forgot to take my name badge off. So I started as a registered nurse. I'm in the process improvement. I'm a process improvement coordinator now here or at the hospital. So I've worked with former member of the asset board, told him that I was looking to find a way to get back to the community, and he said that serving on the asset board would be a really great way to do that.
It is. It's an intense process. Questions for Eric Ford.
Eric, one of the things that asset volunteers do that we don't ask some of our volunteers on other boards is that you're actually asked to be a liaison with a particular social service agency to go in and ask them difficult questions, okay? Can you tell me what you're kind of, how you feel about that, having to go in and ask a service provider tough questions?
Well, my job is at the hospital is to ask tough questions because it's I'm a change agent there. You know, we do process changes. We have to ask people tough questions about process, about how you guys run your departments, how you guys are trying to best serve our patients, which would be the same thing of how these different places would be to serve the community.
Mm-hmm. That's my only question because it is a little different.
Who put you up to this, Eric? Who? Whose conversation did you have with?
The person that was the other.
Yeah, who did you
Ron Smith.
Oh, okay.
he's the other performance improvement coordinator. We share an office, so. But he was the one that was talking about it, and I've heard him talk about it for years about serving on the asset, and it sounded like.
Ron's done a great job. Absolutely.
It's nice to have someone with your background step up because there's a lot of variety there. One of the other people wanted to have a few physicists that works with my husband. And so it's a really mixed group of people who serve on the asset board. So it's great.
Oh,
definitely. So tell me, in your day-to-day life, talk to me about being able to collaborate. So this is a group of 20-something individuals that get together like-minded with you, really trying to get back to the community, really trying to understand what kind of services we provide as a community and how we're going to appropriately get those funded. But it really takes some great teamwork to get to the end of the process. Talk to me about your experiences there and how you view that.
Sure. We do, at the hospital, we do rapid improvement events. I'm a facilitator there, green belt trained for Six Sigma. So I lead teams all the time trying to come to the best solutions to what we call them opportunities instead of problems. But we definitely, that's basically what I do is lead teams, work with cross-functional departments and especially in a hospital setting, you have a lot of silos that come up in there and everybody works in their own little part. So getting everybody to cooperate, work together as a team for the greater good is kind of what I do right now.
Good. Outstanding. Other questions?
No, he makes a compelling case. He came, I think, job ready.
Deb, anything you want to add about asset? Any things that we've missed that Eric needs to know?